Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started. Building your first commercial product can be exciting and challenging at the same time. How does one sell products like plugins, themes in WordPress ecosystem? Bradley Kirby shares his experience selling the first WordPress product by leveraging user feedback, community, and much more. This is episode number 29, Finding Customers for the First WordPress Product with Bradley Kirby. Before we begin, if you've been enjoying this podcast, please do consider leaving a 5-star review over at iTunes. Just head over to smartwebcreators.com/iTunes. If you're using Android platform, you can find links to Stitcher and Spotify by going to smartwebcreators.com/show. That's smartwebcreators.com/show. And now let's begin the episode. Hi, Bradley. How are you?
Hey, Devender. How's it going? I'm good. How are you?
I am doing good. So you would probably be the youngest person to appear on this podcast. But guess what? Age doesn't matter in the online world too much. So before we get on with the real topic of, you know, your first commercial product and how you made sure that it was a success, why don't you give a quick introduction about your online life?
Well, my first real foray into like professional development kind of was when I was in school. Went to school at University of North Carolina. And while I was there, I joined a startup that was focused on like nightlife marketing kind of. And my position there was to make an Android app for them. And I kind of didn't really have any idea how to make an Android app, but I told them like, oh, well, I can learn how to do it. So that was my first kind of foray into it. And then did that for a couple of years. And then after I graduated, this would be in 2014, just did some odd jobs, web development, that kind of thing, always kind of working within WordPress. And through that, I kind of made a couple initial products, WordPress themes, like I had a little bit of traction. And then I started, Wallace Inline, which is my current plugin.
Cool. So Wallace Inline Editor, for someone who do not know about it, it's a add-on plugin for Beaver Builder users. So it's your first commercial WordPress product. So how and why Wallace? And why an add-on for Beaver Builder itself?
Well, I was actually about to transition into doing more full-time client work. And as a part of that, I was building my own site. And I didn't want to, you know, code everything from scratch like I had been doing. I needed something, you know, a little quicker than that. So I started using Beaver Builder, heard a lot about it. And then kind of through the process of me building the site, I had an idea for a plugin, which was front-end editing. And so I was like, I really need to get some money coming in, but, you know, I need to do client work, but let's just see if this is possible, you know, let's just see. And then I made a really quick prototype, and that ended up like kind of proved out the demand for the product. And so that's kind of where I'm from. I was just making my own site, and I was like, wouldn't this be cool if I could just edit the text right there on the site without having to go through the builder?
Everyone hates client work, but yet have to do it, and everyone wants to get out of client work and do something that interests you. I'm sure it was your interest also to build a plugin, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'd been thinking about doing products for a while, and had done a couple of themes before that. So I'd always kind of had these ideas kind of pinging around in my head, and this was been the first one that's really taken off.
So you were using Beaver Builder for your client websites, and you felt the need for Wallace Inline Editor for easier editing on Beaver Builder platform itself. Now, besides the passion of using Beaver Builder and making things easier for yourself, did you do any other, you know, technical research? Like, if I make this product add-on for Beaver Builder, what would be the, you know, demand or user base that may use it, or what is the market size, so on?
It wasn't so much technical, at least not in the beginning. My main criteria was I knew that the Facebook group, the Uber Builder Facebook group, was a really very friendly place, and like there's not too many communities that are as friendly as they are especially when it comes to like product makers.
Exactly. A lot of times product makers, you are trying to sell your stuff, get out.
Right, exactly. But people that are like, at least that community has always been, you know, like, oh, we love that we're building on the platform. We love that.
The vibe is different. There is like, oh man, that's interesting. How can we help you? Like, there will be so many people jumping in that they will say, we are ready to test your product also. Like,
cool. Yep. So that was really the main draw in the beginning to go with Beaver Builder, more than any sort of technical market analysis or anything like that.
And coming to, you know, the first version and the feature set, like, how did you decide which all features you will add in the first, you know, feature, first version of the plugin to make it attractive enough proposition for at least initial customers to, you know, buy your product and use it?
So at the beginning, I was super focused on getting all the text editing working. I mean, I think that text editing, that's probably 70-80% of your typical editing, you know, your actions on a site for a client is editing pieces of text. So I knew I had to get that working and that core experience working really well. And so I focused a lot on just the really minimal interface, like making sure it was really quick and really, you know, really fluid and felt really nice to like edit in text and save text. And so that was like, I knew I had to nail that. And before I really even focused, it didn't have image editing in the beginning.
Yeah,
it was just text. And so since I've expanded, you know, to different content types, you know, icons, links, and all the rest, but I knew at the beginning it was critical that I nail the text part.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, it is Wallace Inline Editor, right? So the first thing that you presented in that add-on was actually inline editing, and that wasn't there in the parent Beaver Builder plugin at that time. Now they've added, but still that is little different from what your plugin offers. Like, yours is a little more sophisticated and more easier to use. And now I think you've expanded beyond inline editing and you've added a host of other features.
Yeah. Kind of how I think about the difference between what a Beaver Builder does, even with their inline editing part, and what I'm doing with Wallace Inline is meant specifically and exclusively for clients only, and it's meant for editing. It's not meant for creating. You know, Beaver Builder is a design tool. It's a creation tool. It's a professional tool. Wallace Inline is meant for, you know, you're in and out. It's easy. You know, you're not gonna build a web design career using Wallace Inline. Wallace Inline is just meant to edit the site that you have. And so that's like very distinct use cases for me. And so even though, you know, Beaver Builder does have an inline editing type feature, I think what really differentiates it is the focus specifically on the clients.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if majority of your clients are actually agency owners.
Mm-hmm. So I think that they are, and professional freelancers.
And, you know, whenever you launch something new, be it a WordPress product or even a course, like when I launched my first course 2-3 years back, you know, you are always excited under the hood, like, and you're already doing some maths. Okay, I'll sell X number of copies, X number of days.
Oh, yeah, do the napkin math.
And I'll make X, like, money part. Yeah. Like, money is always more X's there because, hey. And obviously, you are excited. You were excited about launching your first commercial product. But, you know, behind the scenes, you're also excited about, you know, seeing the sales number go up, at least in the initial burst. So before you went on with the actual sale, did you have that thing in a mind that I'll sell, say, 100 copies in, say, 1 month and make X amount of money in that? Like, did you
have? Oh, yeah. I don't remember what the actual numbers were, but I mean, that was like a very typical like procrastination for me when I was working. I was like, oh, let me just, I'm going to sell them at $49. And so I sell 200 of them, and then I'll make this amount, you know, and then, oh, then I'll go up and recurring. So I definitely did that. I don't remember what the numbers were. And it was never really like serious when I would do that. It was always like kind of more of a fun thing because you never know. never know what's going to happen until you release it. But no, I definitely
yeah, we all do that. Like, I'll put a ballpark figure of like $10,000. Let's divide it by how many copies I need to sell to make that money, yep. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, besides like that is like more of a excitement thing, but on a more real level, I think the one big problem with digital products or even courses is like, how do you price? What do you price?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so when you launched your, you know, the first version and opened it up for the sale, how did you decide on pricing? Just slash $1 out of 50 or out of 100 or slash $3 out of 100 and making 97 or 99? Did you do some maths or did you do some research on deciding the initial pricing?
So early on, I released it really quick because I wanted to prove out the demand at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a complete product.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't price it like it would be a complete product. I priced it at an early access version. And that was what I called it, early access. And I priced it at $39 for a mm-hmm. lifetime license.
Mm-hmm.
But I limited that to 100 sales. And so that was kind of, it gave a little bit of FOMO there. Kind of had some, you know, built the hype a little bit. But then it also wasn't, it was also, I think, that was an appropriate price for where the product was at the time. It's not an appropriate price now, mm-hmm. But it was then. And so, and that I think was I would definitely recommend for other, not like if you're a product salesman or woman or wanting to build a product to do that sort of thing, to have steadily increasing prices where the people that come in early get a deal. That really helped in my case.
Cool. But you did one thing right. You know, $39 is so very cheap than $40. So that's
yeah. I always put a 9 in. I think the 9 is just, you need to put the 9, right?
I prefer 7, you know. I'll do 37, 47, 97. I don't know. I have this fixation with 7. Like, instead of $99, it should be $97.
Interesting. I don't know. I don't know the psychology. How I came up with that, I was like, you know, it looked better to me. So, but that was,
some people even go overboard on that. Like, instead of $99, they will write 99.99.
You know? 99, yeah. That's too much. That's too much. You got the floating penny around. Like whole dollar amount.
Yep. So you decided on the pricing, little bit of sales target in your head. Obviously, you didn't publish them anywhere. No one does. But when you were about to launch, like, what marketing channels did you, you know, focus on to get those initial burst of sales, besides, of course, the Beaver Builder Facebook group?
It really was almost exclusively that at the beginning. I had a landing page up before I sold anything, and it just had an email, and it had just a little video demo of what it was, and I posted that on the group, and then that led to, you know, a couple hundred email signups or something, and so I was emailing those people, but initially the main channel was that Facebook group, and then later on it became, you know, some affiliate people, and then some a lot of word of mouth, and it kind of spread organically in that way, but at the beginning it was just that core Facebook group.
So it was email list plus Facebook groups, right?
Mm-hmm.
And did you reach out to people directly also to get the word out? I remember I linked to your product often in Pro Beaver Weekly, so I know that mm-hmm. part, but then I linked to everyone's product which is related to Beaver Builder, so that's one part of it. Did you proactively reach out to some specific people as well to, you know, push the things out?
I'm trying to think. I think I reached out to the main Beaver Builder people, like Robbie McCullough and those guys.
Uh-huh.
But as for actual influencers, people like you, you just reached out to me, and then also Nathan Wrigley over at WP Builds, he reached out to me. So I didn't do a whole lot of outbound in the beginning. I was mostly like kind of surprised by the amount of interest it had generated, and was just really focused on, you know, building the product at that point.
Yeah, that is what the difference is now with these moderate generation product communities. Like, people are very welcoming, and whether you're creating a free product or a paid product, they would be interested in learning about it rather than, you know, brushing under the carpet. Go make your own group and don't spam here, because earlier these things were labeled as spam, to be honest. Now they are not. And as a product maker also, you feel bad because you have a community who might be interested in your product, but you can't actually even touch the surface. So good that things are changing, at least in Beaver Builder community. There are a few other such communities who are really welcoming, but then we also have communities which are on the other end of the spectrum. How dare you ask a basic question like which theme you are using?
Yeah. I've noticed that within some of the other groups I'm part of. It's interesting how among similar products, the cultures can be so different. I wonder what.
So once your initial sales period was over, there comes a time to, you know, improve your product, make more changes, and, you know, do another burst of sales in, you know, a few weeks or a few months down the line. So firstly, how did you, you know, gather the feedback for your first release of the product, and how did you improve or decide on what all future changes or features you will add to your product?
So, I mean, it was very much based on feedback. But then also it's at the same time, it was kind of obvious. Like once I had nailed that core experience that I was talking about, the kind of the obvious kind of the field to expand into is making sure that the compatibilities are there. And I'm still working on that. So making sure that the compatibilities are there with the other big plugins, the other big module plugins in Beaver Builder, as well as the themer connections, themer itself, plus the connections that it supports. So it's a really broad ecosystem. And each one is not, the way it works technically, it's not automatic to support them. They have to be, each individual module I have to go in and code compatibility for. So it's quite a big project. But at the same time, like, it's not really so much of a mystery that I need to do that. It's just like, yeah, you need to make sure that the compatibilities are there. And so that's kind of what I've been focusing on. And then, I mean, but obviously I'm getting feedback from other things, a big feature that came from feedback was row background image editing. Hadn't really considered that before, and then a few people mentioned that. I was like, oh well, you know, foreground images work nice, but it would also be nice if you could do the row background images. So that came from feedback. And then icon editing too, I hadn't really considered, so that came from feedback.
So after you improved your product, added more features, did you do anything different in the second, you know, phase of selling your product? Besides, of course, increasing the price.
Yep, I have been steadily increasing the price. And then just focusing a little bit more on, basically I was doing the same things, just more and higher quality. That's kind of how I think about it, like reaching out to more people more proactively, doing more like video demos, which I'm still working on, and as well as I set up a live demo on the site. So there's a hosted demo now. So just kind of, that's kind of how I think about it, is like do the minimum at first and then just kind of expand from there. But it's not marketing of a completely different kind. It's just kind of, you know, doubling down on what's come before.
And how important were affiliates and affiliate setup in your, you know, increasing the sales of your product?
Pretty important, especially in this latest release. I was surprised. I had read that, I don't know what blog it was, but someone was arguing that, oh, well, affiliates, like, it's nice, but, you know, you're not going to have most of your sales drive from affiliates. And most of ours aren't either, but it's a sizable chunk, and it's becoming even more than I expected. So, yeah, affiliates are a very important channel.
Yeah, even I can say that Beaver Builder people love your product, because I get good number of affiliate sales for your product. So I get,
yeah.
And just talking from a, you know, broader perspective, what is the, like, the percentage of sales that you get from all the affiliate, you know, setup vis-a-vis the direct sales? Like, is it 50-50 or is it more than 50%?
No, it's not more than 50. I would say in this latest batch, it was around 50. I would say overall, it's been about 25 to 30. Mm-hmm. affiliate. But in this latest batch, it was a marketed increase of the 2.0 release.
Okay, now let's talk about the community part. Like, I know Bebo Builder community is very welcoming and you had good experience, you know, introducing your product, but then there's a way to introduce yourself and even your product. Like, if you first post that you put in your community is like, hey, I've made a product, go buy it from here. That obviously would sound spammy even in a welcoming community like Bebo Builder. Mm-hmm. So what exactly did you do to, you know, have a more pleasant introduction of you as a developer, you as a Bebo Builder user, and you as a product creator for Bebo Builder people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you just have to participate in the community. And I think that's the main thing. And it's not really so much a particular piece of advice, but if you're actively participating, actively reading the threads, contributing, and having the majority of your posts in the group not be even related to your product, that's kind of the main thing, is, you know, being an honest and sincere participant in the community. And then when you do have something to share, you share that, you know, sincerely and without apology. And then I think, like you said, in a welcoming community, most people will accept that.
And when your product went on sale, obviously you did start creating email list, which is actually gold, because you can follow up people who have bought it and you can even upsell things that you create down the line. But other than that, did you create community of other formats like a Facebook group or a Slack channel for your product itself?
I haven't yet. That's something that's definitely on the radar for me. My concern with doing that, and maybe this is unfounded concern, because I mean, this is the first time that I've really done this, so I'm not saying this is the right way to do it. But my concern is that I don't want to just try to start a individual community if it's not going to be, if it doesn't have like the critical mass necessary for it to be successful. I don't want it to be like an empty place, kind of, that someone checks out. I was like, oh, there's nothing going on here. It must not be something that's like worth doing, you know? So that's kind of what my concern, that I haven't done that, but I definitely think it's important, and it's definitely something that I'll probably end up doing this year, but just haven't done yet.
And coming back to the email marketing thing, I guess you started collecting emails even when your product was not for sale and you put it, the email sign up box on the landing page itself.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a simple site that had a video of it and basically an email sign up and a few words about what it was. That was pretty much it at the beginning.
And now that the product is more mature and you have more clarity on the pricing, you know, the workflow and even the type of audience, have you considered or are considering exploring paid marketing methods like Facebook ads, Instagram, or even Google AdWords?
Definitely considering it. It's an interesting question, because there has to be like a very clear search term, like a very clear like query for those things to work, it seems to me. And so like the obvious one for Wallace and that would be inline editor for Beaver Builder.
Yep.
But then that is a bit convoluted now, because, well, one, it does more than inline editing, and I don't really think of it as an inline editing feature. I think of it as a editor for clients. And two, like, what does inline editing mean? You know, it's like, it seems like a clear term at first, but it's not really, because the type of inline editing that exists in Beaver Builder is pretty different than the type of inline editing that exists with Wallace Inline. So I don't know. I think it's kind of like the Facebook group question, where like, it seems obvious to me that is going to be an important growth channel in the future. And then I think I'm just kind of at the precipice where it's probably going to start making sense, but it didn't make sense before. So yeah, I guess that's a long way of saying like, I'm actively thinking about it.
Yeah, because marketing is very important. And I guess maybe you can consider rebranding the name of your product and drop the inline word, just have Wallace editor, because that will create better, you know, understanding in your face of your product. Because here, when I say Wallace inline editor, oh, it's just an inline editor, right? So that actually boxes your functionality of your product, even though your functionality is way wider than just inline editing. So that can be one to do it. So I guess rebranding. A lot of people do it. It can be done. You're not changing the whole
name. Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting question too.
Other popular thing in WordPress is, you know, offering the free light version and then upselling the paid version. You did not go that path. Any specific reason? Like, you didn't put out the free version of Wallace Inline Editor and, hey, get four extra features when you upgrade to the Pro.
Yeah. And again, that might be something I end up doing in the future too. The reason I haven't done it yet is because it's meant very specifically for professional agencies and freelancers. So it's the idea is that you wouldn't really have a use for Wallace Inline unless you had paying clients yourself. So if that's true, then maybe there's not a lot of utility in having a free version. And then I think that the type of customers you get, the type of users you get are different in a free version of anything. And so maybe that the initial feedback, if I had done that first, would be different than what a paying customer requires. A free customer necessarily doesn't necessarily need the same things or value the same things. And so I definitely think it was the right move to go premium first. I think I might end up doing a free version, but kind of as like a trialware type thing rather than a, because I think the other, I mean, Beaver Builder itself has a free version. And so too, I think Ultimate Add-ons has a,
all of them. Ultimate Beaver also has it.
Yeah, but I think they all have free versions. So I think it makes sense to do that. I'm glad I didn't at first, though. It seems like at first it was more of a, it would have been too much of a distraction. Because it does introduce a lot of overhead. You have to deal with
support
WordPress repository. You have to deal with pre-support questions, maintaining two different versions that you have to update independently.
Yep.
Yeah, it's kind of like the other questions that you asked. It probably does make sense going forward to do something like that as a marketing channel.
Now,
it's something I'm considering.
Now, your product is completely based on Beaver Builder, and you know what? WordPress page builder ecosystem, there's a big fight going on, like Builder, Elementor, who's the best, even though I don't get into this fight, because I know...
No, it's bad.
Even though I know which... I always say, you know, pick a tool, become an expert in that. Unless a tool breaks on a foundation level, don't. If Elementor works for you, stick with it. Beaver works for you, stick with it. Because obviously... We are just not talking about Elementor Beaver. There are so many new entrants like Brizzy, Oxygen. You just name it. Like, every page builder has a loyalist group, and they will defend it to blood, bone, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah. Like programming languages now. People are so like protective of their tooling.
So, is there any limitations that you feel that you've just, you know, cocooned your product to Beaver Builder, or are you planning to build something similar for, say, other page builder ecosystems?
I'm definitely looking to expand. I don't yet know what the timeline for that would be, or how hard that's going to be. But that's definitely the plan, and that was actually part of the reason for I rewrote the whole plugin for the 2.0 release. And part of the reason for that was to make it more modular, and so that those types of expansions could happen in the future. So in the early stages of thinking about that, for sure. And I think that's important to the growth of the plugin. So yeah, and I think I've done it in a way that it can be modular for other page builders and for Gutenberg as well, which I think it's important to support that too.
I was coming to support you.
Yeah, the wide range of visual editing.
Yeah, because to be honest, even though we may talk bad about Gutenberg, we may hate it, but guess what? That's the future, because every plugin, every theme will fall in line with Gutenberg, because you don't have any other option, because that will be the foundation. And you having Wallace Inline Editor for just Gutenberg can be very unique proposition, because I don't see anyone, at least until unless they listen to this episode, you know, think about it, but you know, it can be really good proposition. Maybe not now, but at least end of the year when Gutenberg matures, like by the end of third and fourth phase, it would more likely work as a page builder, because as of now it only works in the editor. But third phase plans to take it out of the editor and, you know, slap it in every template area, be it header, footer, and this is, you can even put your menus via Gutenberg blocks. I don't know how it will look because even the current UI isn't that pleasing, to be honest. It's kind of, you know, you have to click on an icon to see what it does, because it's like, it's like a, they put in small little icons which actually don't make too much sense. They got to, you know, clean the interface a little. I hope they are, but you never know.
Yeah, it's a big challenge, I think, for everybody in the WordPress space, is what to do about Gutenberg and when to jump on, and when to hold back. I think for me, it's definitely prudent, like you said, to hold back for a little bit until like the next phase, until it gets to the page builder type of functionality that they have in the works, and to see if that's, I mean, it's certainly possible that doesn't become adopted. You know, that is like, that's a possibility. And by adopted, I mean, obviously it's going to be adopted by WordPress, but adopted by the broader professional WordPress community in terms of agencies and so forth. It's possible that that Gutenberg will just be seen as a something for your casual users, your power users, and that sort of thing, and not something that you're going to build professional websites with. And so it would be a big mistake to invest a lot of time and resources into getting compatibility if that adoption doesn't happen among the customer base that I'm going after.
As of now, it does not, but maybe down the line, like end of this year, by the time people have more clarity on what it does, like as of now, people are churning out Gutenberg, you know, add-ons, and they are pulling their hair out to update it every time Gutenberg's, you know, updates.
It's moving too quick still.
Yeah, because they're changing the foundation variables also sometimes. And when you change the foundation stuff, you have a broken add-on. So you have to rewrite the whole thing. It's kind of painful.
I mean, I follow on GitHub and the discussions around it pretty frequently. And yeah, there's just some big main infrastructural type issues that they haven't really nailed down yet. So until that happens, I would, my direction is focusing on the other page builders in the market to expand compatibility to, rather than focusing on that for now.
Yeah, go for the big one, Elementor. Okay, so you've made your first commercial product and you've seen the success, right? Now, you know, once you launch something, the one type of product, and you get the itch of doing another one and replicate that success, or maybe get more success. So is that the feeling with you now? Like, okay, I'm going to launch a few more of them.
Not really at all. I don't feel that at all. I'm so focused on this one. I'm so focused on Wallace Online that it doesn't even, the idea of doing another one from scratch, just like, that gives me anxiety actually. Like I know where this can go, and there's so much room. So much room to expand.
Yeah,
for Wallace. So I'm not tempted at all by doing a second plugin.
And you're working alone, right? Like you do all the development coding and even selling management, etc. Or do you have anyone
that
helps you?
Just me.
Okay, maybe down the line when you have more people helping you.
Oh yeah, I'd love to have a team. I would love to have a team. I'm not one of those people that are like, no, I don't want to hire anybody. I want to do it all on my own. No, I would love to have a team. So that's definitely the goal, is to expand it to the point where it makes sense to build a team around it.
And now, do you do website development for clients, or you are just solely focused on wallets?
I'm 100% on Wallace Online right now. Yeah.
Okay, you've quickly moved from out of that vicious circle of finding that next client for building your next website. That's awesome.
And now it's finding the next customer. It's so much different.
Yeah, but it's still better than finding a next client, to be honest. I can tell you that. You know, it's because it can be a really big burnout, you know, finding those website clients. And every client is different. But here, the advantage is that most of the people who you will target or who will buy your product, they are most of them are similar in their personalities and like homogeneous nature, but clients can be like from A to Z, like they can be of all kinds of variety. So let's get to your toolbox. So which are your current five favorite tools that power your online business?
Five favorite tools. Really like Visual Studio Code. It's my I just switched from PHP, or I just switched from Sublime and PHP Storm to VS Code, and I've been really enjoying it. And so that's probably my number one in terms of just like, you know, every day it's always up. It's up right now behind behind the screen right now. Let's see, for email, MailChimp, obviously Page Builder, Beaver Builder. What else? I'm trying to think. It seemed like the big ones. What categories of things? Oh, WP Engine's my host. I really like them.
What do you use to sell your plugin? EDD or WooCommerce?
Oh, EDD, yep. Yep, EDD. Yeah, EDD. I really like them.
So my next question
that's it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say that's an interesting space too, because I was going to talk about Freemius. Have you had on any of the Freemius guys?
Nope, not yet. But I know a lot of people use Freemius for their digital products. And a lot of people have also started using Gumroad to sell their digital products. Like,
interesting. Yeah, I've seen that too.
And I don't recall the plugin names, but since I'm affiliate of a lot of plugins. So, you know, when you generate your affiliate link and, you know, oh, you're also using Gumroad, because the thing with Gumroad, it's like a plug and play solution. You don't have to install anything. You can have a static WordPress website and just link over it.
Right.
It gives you all kinds of affiliate management. Even it gives you the product license key management thing. Like you have an EDD, it's similar kind of, it's just, you don't have to, you know, work on your stuff. It's working on their infrastructure. So they have all the bells and whistles, and it doesn't cost you. It's free to begin with.
Do they charge like a cut? Do they take a cut of sales?
If you are free, then they charge 10%. Like if you are on paid, and the paid isn't that expensive. It's hardly $10 per month. So.
Oh, yeah, really? That's something interesting. Like that. It's an interesting space. I've been considering... if I wanted to, I don't want to switch because it's just the switching costs are too high. But the other products, the newer products in the space to sell plugins are definitely interesting to me. Freemius is the one that I've considered the most. It's just the percentage fee part is just what I always get choked up on. like one time fees, they don't take a cut, you know. But I think they have a really good product though. So
yeah,
it works for a lot of people.
A lot of people use it. So I think even Beaver Builder uses it now. I think there's, because I remember seeing their, you know, that pop-up thing that you get in your, hey, do you help want to improve this thing? I know that's a Freemius thing, to be honest.
That's annoying. It's annoying for, I mean, I think it's great. And I'll probably include it in my free thing whenever I build it. But it's annoying as a plugin developer when you're testing and you're like, deactivate all the time. You know, you don't want to have to answer a question every time. But
yep.
They have good products.
And my next question was actually, which is your recommended web hosting service? Like you've already mentioned WP Engine. So you've already, you've been using WP Engine from the start, or you hopped on few services?
Yeah, I've always been on them. I'm trying to remember why I chose them. I think it was probably their co-founder. Was his name Jason Cohen, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen him in a bunch of different areas, and he seems like, you know, like really cool guy, I guess, for lack of a better word. So that was just happened to be like first of mind when I was thinking of web host with WP Engine, and I've had nothing but a good experience with it.
Okay, my next question is, obviously, I know the answer, but I'll still ask you. Recommended page builder, Beaver, Thrive, Elementor. Okay, I'm not going to list all of them.
it's got to be Beaver Builder. Yeah, I feel like they're like the OG. I know they're not. They weren't the original page builder, but it seems like, I don't know. For in my mind, they're like the original.
Yeah, it is a page builder for developers, to be honest, because I don't develop on Beaver Builder in terms of like building custom modules and all that, but a lot of people who are in my ecosystem do that. And most of them are really happy in saying that, you know, the code in Beaver Builder is modular and it's easy to build stuff over Beaver Builder as far as custom stuff. And they have had a lot of pain building the same thing over other page builders, which I'm not going to name, but it's going to start a war.
That's what I'm worried about.
So it's going to start a war, because I know you have a plan to build it for the other page builder. Mind you, you've got to have some good brain exercise to get started doing that.
I know I started on easy mode because that was another reason that I chose Beaver Builder. In addition to the community, the code base was really, really well documented, really well structured, and the kind of the documentation around extending it was really good.
And any upcoming tool or service that has caught your eye attention besides Freemius?
That's probably the one I would mention. That's, yeah, Freemius and on Gumroad that you mentioned. Those are the kind of the ones I've been looking at.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So any last message to someone who's listening to this and want to build their first WordPress product, not necessarily a plugin, what they need to focus on?
Starting small and getting audience, getting the first, you know, customer or first interest as quickly as possible. Because it was only 2 weeks from me having the idea to me having a sign-up list for Walls Online. So I had the idea, and then I only allowed myself 2 weeks to actually build the first demo video for it. And so that would be what I'd recommend above anything else is, you know, get something out there quick and validate it. And if it's not, if you don't see that initial interest, then, you know, try something else because you only spent 2 weeks, right? So you do that. And then I think that's going to give you a lot better chance of finding something that works, because the worst thing you can do is spend 6 months, a year on something and then release it and then nobody wants it. It's just, oh, it feels so bad. I've done that before too. That was my first product I had was this theme called, it's actually called, well, the first, the commercial version was called Red Eye Theme. And okay. It was a theme that was like, they used the new WordPress REST API. Uh-huh. And it was a full single page app. And it was a full single page app, so it took forever to build. And because nobody had done it before. And I thought, oh, this is going to be the new thing. I'm going to be the first one there, you know. And I released it, and they're like, ah, well, nobody wants, turns out nobody wants the spa-based or single-page app-based.
Yeah, and you're adding REST API to the description. That's scary enough to people to shut the door. Oh, man, I don't need it.
Yeah, the developers are like, oh, that's really cool you did that. But then they're like, nobody's buying that.
Yeah, the thing with so-called revolutionary product is like everyone in your developer community will praise you. Oh man, you're the first one. You're the first one. But guess what? Even developers won't buy that thing from you because guess what? It's the first one.
That's what scares me about Gutenberg. It's like if you're building a product for Gutenberg, I'd be careful because you might end up in that exact place that I was in with the REST API where you're the first to market and also the last one because nobody like.
And one thing just crossed my mind, like you've been working solo on this product for quite some time and this product is growing. Did that thing of hiring a partner developer or maybe a contractor developer came across your mind so far?
I mean, like I said, I just don't have the financial resources to do it. That's what's holding me back. And I don't think I'd want to take on an equity partner necessarily. So I think, yeah, I mean, I've hired some contractors for design type work, just real small stuff. But I mean, it's something I would want to do. I really want to like build a team around it. But yeah, right now, just don't have the resources to do it.
Awesome. Okay, Bradley, before we wrap this episode, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter, Bradley_Kirby, and check out Wallace Inline at wallaceinline.com.
Awesome. It was amazing talking to you. I hope
you enjoyed it. It was great talking to you, Devender. I did. I enjoyed it very much. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, man. Have a good day.
You as well.
You can join the free web creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.